The following is an encore presentation from February the 11th, 2007.
On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
Well, it's Valentine's Day. We've got a very special Valentine's Day program on the Bookshelf today. Our special guest is Ken Bloom, who along with Jerry Orbach and Elaine Orbach has written a book, Remember How I Love You, Love Letters from an Extraordinary Marriage. It's from Touchstone Books, which is a division of Simon & Schuster. Now, first of all, Ken, welcome to On the Bookshelf.
I'm so glad to be here.
Second of all, I realize that part of what makes this book interesting as far as from an interviewing standpoint is that you're the only one of the three authors who is still available to be interviewed.
Yes, sadly, that's true.
As a matter of fact, after Jerry died, I think, was it Sam Waterston, or among many who had knew about these poems that Jerry had been writing to her every day of their married life, these 25 years, said something to Elaine about putting them in some kind of book. And shortly after this book was more or less organized, but not when it was published yet, she died too.
Right, that's right. I first found out about the poems at Jerry's memorial service, when Elaine and Sam Waterston and others wrote it. And I had known Jerry and Elaine. I had produced some benefit shows, and Jerry was kind enough to be the MC of these benefits. And, you know, they had a very normal marriage. They lived in an apartment. They never owned a house, never owned an apartment. They only rented. He never had a personal manager, really, or a publicist. When I wanted to get in touch with him for a benefit, I just called his house and he called me back. He was just not a real movie television star.
Yeah, not in the sense that we think of that somebody who's got an entourage and all these layers surrounding him. They were just, for people who worked in the business, and I realize Elaine was on Broadway in the musical Chicago when she and Jerry met. These are both professional people.
Yeah, and, maybe because they started in theater when they were young, and so they didn't like make it big. They worked their way up.
Yeah.
And so they had everything sort of in perspective, you know. They didn't go on any trips with each other unless it was one of these cruises where Jerry would speak.
Where he was sort of he was the guest celebrity on the cruise.
Absolutely.
When you first heard about these poems at Jerry's memorial, did you have any sort of idea of the number of them or their style or anything like that?
I only knew that they were really funny, they were very touching, and that's all I knew. And I contacted Elaine, and this was about a year after Jerry died, so it wasn't as fresh to her, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah.
You know, so she was able to get these poems out. And like you say, there were hundreds of them. Every day when he would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to Law and Order, she would still be asleep. And so with her breakfast dishes, he wrote a poem on the back of one of those daily cat calendars.
Yeah.
You know, and he'd leave it for her so when she woke up, he would still be able to say good morning to her. And they're all different subjects. They're not just love poems, but they're poems about the weather, about filming in the cold during Law and Order, or the guest stars, or politics, or what newspaper he's reading, or stuff. So there are a whole breadth of things, but it was just such a lovely story. And are the poems great? You know, no, but they're a lot of fun to read.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of humor in them.
They're very sweet poems, and you're right. They run the gamut from, oh, honey, honey, I love you, to, hey, I'm getting up in it. It's crummy weather, but, hey, it beats working for a living, you know, that sort of thing.
Or, right, it's just me and the trash men, or, you know, the sun is coming up over the Hudson type thing. They're really fantastic.
Every husband who thinks, oh, wow, I wonder what I could do to really impress my wife. Here's a guy who was who was on Broadway more than any other lead actor in Broadway history.
Right.
Here's a guy who's became an international figure by playing the dad in a wonderful movie, Dirty Dancing. And then his fame goes even higher when he gets on television. So all those years he was on Broadway, there were a handful of people who knew who he was. He had a couple of semi-TV hits or misfires, and then all of a sudden Dirty Dancing didn't open the door to a lot of movies, but in a way it opened the door to Law and Order, and that opened and that made him a household word around the world. And yet here's this guy who still just thinks of himself as a working actor. He gets up, gets ready, his wife's asleep, and instead of kissing her and waking her up, he writes her a little four little funny lines. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, and of course it intimidated a lot of other husbands.
Yeah,
when she would talk about it, and then their wives would talk. And do I have time to tell a little bit about the vacuuming story?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they never had a maid because Elaine gave up her career, and Jerry would be in his boxer shorts vacuuming, and Elaine would be holding the cord, and he'd say, "Come on, cord girl, we're going over here." You know, and one day she had pulled her back out, so he went downstairs to do the laundry. You know, in the bottom of the apartment building was the laundry room. And all the other wives were there in the laundry room, and they were like, "Jerry Orbach is here." And he said, "Well, Elaine, you know, can't do the laundry, so I'm doing the laundry." So the next day, there's a knock at the door, and one of the husbands is there and said, "You ruined it for all of us, because now my wife wants to know why I can't do the laundry."
Right. If Jerry Orbach can vacuum his wife's floors, if he can do her laundry, why can't you do mine? I can just hear these ladies giving it to their husbands.
Right, exactly. So they had that kind of a funny marriage, and they knew who they were. Jerry had an ego, like anybody does.
Sure.
But he didn't flaunt it, and he didn't make a big deal. In one of the benefits that I did for New York City Opera, they had a dance band after the performance, and Jerry and Elaine just stayed there and danced with everybody, and people talked to him, and he was just cool. You know,
yeah.
There weren't any bodyguards, or he didn't run out of there. He was still going to have a good time with his wife, and that was very sweet.
Yeah, it seems to me, you know, here you have two enormously talented people. She does what is, in these days, considered to be sort of a non-PC kind of thing. You know,
yeah.
She gives up her career, which was, she had a good career on Broadway. She gives up her career to be Mrs. Jerry Orbach. And he never forgot the sacrifice that she made, nor the fact that she was an enormously talented and beautiful and brilliant woman. And sometimes there's a little passage in here about when he was doing Law & Order, that Elaine suggested that they try to learn Spanish so he could communicate with the apartment staff and speak with the crew on Law & Order. So he would practice, and this is when Ben Bratt was on the show, and he would practice and he would practice, and it didn't go as well, and I understand this because trying to learn a foreign language when you're older is not necessarily always very successful.
You're right.
And I love this poem that he wrote. This is September of 2002. "The shoes I wear are not by Prada. The dance I do is not lambada. When I kiss you, it's yada yada. You say thank you, I say de nada." And this is the kind of stuff he wrote to her every morning.
Right. And, you know, she used to say to him, you're in the car on the way to the set, and he would have the little Spanish cassettes or discs put in the stereo of the car and practice on his way to the set. And she said, "It's not fair, you know. You have these extra hours to learn Spanish." And, you know, Ben Bratt would coach him also. He was really like a father figure to Ben Bratt.
Yeah.
And they were unbelievably close. It was really sweet. And Ben was nice enough to write a little reminiscence in the book. And Ben Bratt seems to me, you know, I've been in touch with him because of the book, and he seems to be like Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
A working actor, you know.
Yeah.
Very matter of fact.
A normal kind of guy who just happens to act for a living.
Right. I love that because you come across, you see everything on TV of all these tabloid people.
Sure, and, sure.
You know.
Yeah,
it's
I mean.
That they remember that they were just people.
Well, one of the things about the Law & Order set, and reading about it in the book, is it's encouraging because it seems like really, I mean, these are incredible actors that they have on this show, and yet it doesn't come across that any of them had this super ego. They were all just so excited to be working with each other, which I thought that was charming, too.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, all comes from the top, and I guess Dick Wolf is the producer, and I guess he set the tone. And look, they had been together for years, so it really was like a family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, we're talking, in case you're just joining us on this Valentine's Day on the Bookshelf, to Ken Bloom, who is the author, along with Jerry and Elaine Orbach, of Remember How I Love You. And this is from a Touchstone hardcover, which is available from Simon & Schuster and available at bookstores and online everywhere. And it includes these wonderful little poems that Jerry wrote every morning as he was leaving the house, leaving his wife asleep, going off to work, and he wrote these sweet little poems to his wife, and sometimes they're just goofy little poems, and he gets a little Ogden Nashish from time to time, finding really funny ways to rhyme. But according to this, Ken, he really had only a handful of very normal things that he did. He loved his wife, and he loved to do stuff with her. He loved to play cards, and he loved to play golf, and he loved his work.
Yeah, he would go to his club, so to speak, which was all these old guys with, you know, pool tables and a sauna and all. He didn't go to a fancy health club. And they would play poker. And there's a whole section in the book about, you know, he would leave her a note about when he won and when he lost. And, you know, he wasn't a big gambler, but it was just to be with the guys. And every day she cooked dinner for him, and they didn't really go out to eat very much. There was all the pressure of being on television. And when he came home, he just wanted to be with his wife, and they would snuggle up and watch the Golden Girls. And she was much shorter than he was. She was a Broadway dancer, and I guess she was like 5'3", 5'4". And, you know, he was tall.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had this stool, sort of a hassock-type stool that was, you know, in front of a chair. And for her to kiss him, he would say to her, "Get on the kissing stool." And she'd dutifully get up on the stool so their mouths would be on the same level. So they had these little personal things, you know, about their marriage, which was just between the two of them, which was really very nice.
The really sweet thing is that Elaine is sharing these wonderful poems with us and challenging us guys to step it up a notch a little bit. Although I don't think, like with the incident with the vacuum cleaner guy, I don't really think that he ever would have thought of this as, okay, boys, I'll show you how to be a great husband. I think that he just really wanted to be a good husband to her, and these poems just flowed naturally out of his love for her and wanting to leave something sweet for her so that when she woke up and he was already gone, there they'd be.
Right. And, you know, it was hard after Jerry died for Elaine to revisit, you know, her life. It was strange because she used to say, "He's still with me because every time I turn on the TV, there he is."
Oh, that's the truth. I mean, I suppose somewhere, everywhere in the world at some hour, Law and Order is playing. And the new ones, the old ones, the in-between ones. And Jerry was such an integral part of the show for most of this of the run of the original series that it's you'd be hard pressed to find a day when you couldn't find Jerry Orbach on television. And I'll be honest with you, for somebody who'd been a fan of his, I was a kid when the Fantastics came out, and as I discovered the soundtrack album when I was in high school, about the same time he was doing Promises, Promises, I thought, this is a great singer. This is a great actor. Wow, I sure hope I get to see him on stage someday. Never dreaming that he would become enormously famous, not as a Broadway star, but as a playing a kind of slightly irascible New York detective. The guys in New York, though, this is a portrayal of the New York police that really apparently resonated with the NYPD too.
Absolutely. You know, they'd be walking. They walked everywhere. They didn't care about, you know, buses, or he'd take the subway, and the policemen who saw him would all yell out to him. And one time, I guess it was raining, and the police car pulled up and they said, "Get in," and they went in the back of the police car, you know, with the grate between the back door, back seat and the front seat, and
right.
Said, "I hope nobody sees us because they're going to think we were arrested."
Truly.
They had a good sense of humor about life and who they were, and really it was all about sharing their life together. That was the most important thing, which is why this book is so great for Valentine's Day, because, I don't know, it gives you a warm feeling and sort of reminds you of what a relationship is really all about.
Now, I realize that he had been married previously to Elaine. He has children by his first wife.
Yeah, he has two sons by his first wife. And they had separated about a year before he met Elaine. And then Elaine and he dated for a long time. They didn't really think of marriage, and they sort of... She just went on the road with him in a Neil Simon play, and because she was in it also, and they sort of slid into marriage, and they were like, "Well, we might as well get married." But it wasn't like she went after him or he was looking to get a second wife.
Right.
It was just all very calm, and that was the good thing. There wasn't a lot of drama.
Yeah, yeah. You know? They were both working. They were both doing a show. They met doing a show, a great show, Chicago, and they started hanging out. And getting to be friendly, and there was just a sweet natural progression. But you're right, there was never the feeling of, either, you know, she's the other woman or anything like that, or I'm going to show my ex-wife, I'm going to find a beautiful Broadway babe to marry.
Right.
There doesn't seem to ever be any of that sort of thing.
And Jerry's mother is still alive in her 90s, by the way.
Wow.
And, you know, Jerry, of course, paid for her apartment and her living, and Elaine continued to until Elaine died. And then in Elaine's will, she still is paying for Jerry's mother's apartment,
and
her living expenses. So they were very menschy about all this stuff.
Well, now, it doesn't really talk a lot in the book about his sons, because this is a love story book. But I am curious, did he get along okay with his sons? I mean, did they like Elaine?
And he helped, you know, put one of the sons through college, and they had a pretty good relationship. And one of the sons especially really liked Elaine, and they were very, very close.
Well, that's neat. I realize it doesn't matter to me personally, except that you'd not like to think that two nice, normal people like these two, who really loved each other, that his sons would enjoy them as well.
Yeah, and you know, it can be difficult always, the evil, wicked stepmother.
Right.
You know, but Elaine was just like Jerry, easygoing, and she accepted it, and she was very proud of them, actually.
I really think it says a lot that in a crazy business like show business that these two nice people could find each other and not be in a big dash to get married, but just take it nice and slow and learn about each other and learn to like each other and then to love each other. That's not a bad pattern for anybody dating, whether it's your first marriage or your most recent marriage, to take your time and to get to know each other well. And maybe that's one of the reasons that they had such a wonderful union.
Yeah, they were really the center of each other's lives. Like I said, they never went to big parties, or they just didn't care about that. You know, it was a lot of work doing Law and Order.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the off times, like I said, he would be invited on these film cruises where they'd show Dirty Dancing or Prince of the City or something. And
right.
There's a story in the book about when they went to Greece. I don't know if you remember, but
yeah, yeah.
Some guy in Greece in a very small island without cars or anything ran up to him and said something, and of course it was in Greek. Jerry had no idea what it was.
Right.
And so they had the guy write it down, and when they got back to Athens, they said to this Greek man, "What does this mean?" And the guy, "I don't know what it means, but it says, 'We love you, Dirty Dancing Daddy.'" So halfway around the world in this little town in Greece that may not have had electricity, they still knew him from Dirty Dancing.
Now see, my wife is not a big follower of Broadway, and when that movie came out, she just loved it. And I said, "Wait a minute, this is Jerry Orbach. Isn't this the guy that did the Fantastics? Isn't this Promises, Promises, and all these other shows?" And she said, "Oh, really? Has he done stuff before this movie?" And I really think for a lot of people, that's the way they were, too, unless they followed Broadway, unless they followed theater. They didn't know Jerry Orbach from anybody. But, wow, what a wonderful role this was for him. What great character and nuance and what great depth he invested in what could have been just sort of a cardboard fill-in-the-blank kind of role.
Yeah, it wasn't a lead character, you know, by any means, and it was a very low-budget picture that no stars.
Right.
You know, Patrick Swayze wasn't known then, and Joel Grey's daughter Jennifer was in it. No one had ever heard of her.
Right. She was on the original Nose. So,
yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, so
they were like in North Carolina at some sort of a summer camp, but there wasn't summer anymore, and they were, you know, holed up there without any heat, and it was just done on the cheap.
Yeah.
But for Jerry, it was a way to get into the movies.
Amazing, amazing.
You know, and kids know him because he was the candelabra in Beauty and the Beast.
Right, right.
And that comes as a surprise to people because, like you said, like your wife, no one knew he could sing.
Yeah, oh, but he had a great voice. Now, that was something, too, around the Law and Order set. He was not the only singer around there. Tell us a little bit about some of the impromptu concerts that they did.
Well, Jesse Martin, who was Jerry's last partner on the show,
mm-hmm.
was one of the original cast members of Rent
right.
on Broadway. And it was nice because Jerry sort of eased the way for Jesse to get into dramatic television when he had no experience in that kind of a thing at all. And when they were bored on the set and all, they would start singing in harmony, and Ben Bratt would try to, you know, chime in or whoever was around, and they would do these quartets and trios and stuff. And I had a friend who was an extra on the show, and she was like, what are they doing? You know, she just couldn't believe that this is what it was like. But I remember Karen Ziemba, who's also a Broadway actress, was one of Jerry's favorite people, and he got her on Law & Order, and he just said to her, just calm down, you're a professional, don't be nervous, just say your lines, and we'll get through, and we'll all get out of here. Because he just wanted, like, do the job, I'll get in my car, I'll come home to my wife, you know, let's not have any drama.
Oh, that reminds me of another story in your book. There was people who, they were having rehearsals for the stand-ins or something, Or the backup or the
yeah, the extras.
The extras. Okay.
Right.
Tell us that story. That's a riot.
I don't remember which one you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Let's see. It was one. The extras were rehearsing and they rehearsed and they rehearsed and they rehearsed and they rehearsed.
Oh.
And finally Jerry says something like, "Just how much rehearsal do they need with the extras?"
Right.
Exactly,
because like I said, he wanted to get home.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was actually not the extra's fault, but it was a new director.
Ah.
And he was going to do something really arty, I guess. And so everything had to be perfect. And Jerry's like, they're just walking by.
Yeah.
Just let them do it and, you know, let's get on with it. And I think we have to say the other thing about this book is it does cover Jerry's last illness, which
yes.
went on for 10 years. And that was a really hard thing for Elaine to, you know, bring back.
I would think so. This is not just the kind of thing where you wake up one day, you got 3 months, and it's all over. This is a long, drawn-out event. And for a while, it looked like he'd been able to beat the cancer. He was going to be okay. And the doctors pretty much said, you know, this ought to be a knock, right?
Right, exactly. And it's interesting because there's poems in the book about his bluey pills, his pink pills, today's a green day, or poems about his radiation treatments. And the interesting thing is no one knew about this except the cast of Law & Order. And in all those years, it never made the papers. Everybody respected his privacy because he was a private type of guy. And it never came out until the very end, and then it was a shock to people that
yeah.
he'd been sick.
Yeah, yeah. When I heard that he was dying of prostate cancer, I was flabbergasted. I thought, you know, he's not that old, and prostate cancer tends to be a disease that more men die with than of.
Right, exactly.
And the fact that he'd been fighting it for so long, that was really a huge surprise. And like you said, we're talking about a 10-year span. That he was involved in this, he and Elaine were involved in this fight against prostate cancer. So that's just a little under half of their married life together.
Exactly. And, you know, it really threw them. But again, they were so secure in their own love for each other and that Elaine wasn't going to leave or not support him or whatever, that it made it so much easier. And she became part of the routine of his treatments and really was in there with him all the way. And so he was able to keep a good sort of viewpoint on his illness and what it meant. And it wasn't all fun and games, but he had a positive attitude the whole time. And I think that meant a lot to him.
Well, and like you said, the folks at Law & Order were very respectful of his privacy and everybody kept a lid on it. But on the other side, they also loved him so much that when he finally got to the point where he really could not continue with the show. Well, just prior to it, there's a story that you tell about. As it's starting to metastasize to more and more parts of his body and a tumor growing in his vocal cords.
Right.
And this is a guy with a great singing voice, a great speaking voice, and now he's getting where he can barely speak above a whisper.
Right. So everybody on the set started thinking because he just couldn't, you know, say his lines really out loud. So they pretended that they were being bugged or that people were going to be able to eavesdrop. So everybody else started whispering as if they were trying to keep everything quiet. And that was just really so touching that they were trying to cover it up. And, of course, eventually he had to leave the series because it just got to be too much for him.
Yeah, but even then, they give him this wonderful party that when he's in the hospital and it's getting close to the end, his friends from work come to see about him. It really was a family with all of these guys.
Right, and it was an interesting thing because Elaine wasn't at the party with the cake, but someone showed her a picture, and she said, oh, I knew immediately that Jerry was in a lot of pain during that party. And I said, well, how did you know? And she said, because his hands were in his pockets. And he never kept his hands in his pockets, but he was, like, stiffening up trying to gather his strength. And just from that photo, she knew what he was going through that day.
Mm. Even toward the end, he still writes these poems for her and still lets her know how important she was to him. And he also, you have a poem in here that he had for his doctor.
I know.
He must have really been as extraordinary to know as he always seemed to be, the same kind of likable person that he so often portrayed. He must have really been that kind of person.
Yeah, it's nice to know that he just, you know, we know a lot of actors who seem to be really nice, but then you find out they're really not nice.
Yeah.
'Cause they can act nice. But Jerry was Jerry, and what you saw was what you got, and he didn't try to be anybody else. And that came a lot from the security of himself and his talent and his marriage.
Yeah.
That he had all the support he needed. He didn't need you to tell him how great he is because his wife did that every day.
Yeah, yeah. What a great thing for all of us to look for in our marriage, to be so secure with each other that we don't have to be patted on the back constantly, or that we don't have to be applauded all the time. We just have to have a realistic understanding of our own abilities. And somebody who loves us unconditionally, and that is exactly what Jerry and Elaine had.
Right. I mean, Jerry knew that his accomplishments were not that he was on Law and Order or Dirty Dancing or anything, but his real accomplishment was as being a good person and the best person he could be, the nicest person, and he was a thoughtful person, and, you know. And really, for all of us, it's not if you write a book or make a movie or anything that makes us good people. It's just being a good person makes you a good person.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, Ken, you really gave us an opportunity here, a little window of insight into a showbiz couple, into a very famous husband and not as quite a famous as wife, but what a wonderful life they had together, and what a wonderful way that they had of loving each other and of making each other know that how deeply they were loved. And what a great story for Valentine's Day.
Okay. Thank you very much for this. It was really terrific.
Oh, thank you, Ken. I really enjoyed the book.
I know. You made that clear. You really knew a lot about it.
I was a big fan of his long before he was a household name. And,
right.
It was just really neat to see. And I think I'm going to get one of those little pads.
Uh-oh. Watch out. Because the day you don't write one, you're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, that's the only danger with starting something like this. You got to keep it going.
Right, exactly. So you may want to write them a few days in advance or something.
That's not a bad idea. Maybe get a bunch of them in the can before I start leaving them out.
Huh? There you go.
Ken Bloom, thanks so much for joining us today on The Bookshelf.
All right, thanks very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, how about you? Maybe today is the day to get out that little pad and write a note to someone that you love, to your spouse, and let them know how very special they are to you. Once again, our guest today, Ken Bloom, the co-author, along with Jerry and Elaine Orbach. The book, Remember How I Love You, Love Letters from an Extraordinary Marriage. It's got a foreword by Sam Waterston and an afterword by Richard Belzer, two of his castmates on Law & Order, in which he was a featured player for a dozen years until his prostate cancer finally forced him to retire from the show. The book is available from Touchstone Books, which is a division of Simon & Schuster. We'll see you next Sunday on The Bookshelf on FM 94.7 at 9:30 in the morning, or on AM 970 and WTBF.com, our website, at 2:30 in the afternoon. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Have a great Valentine's Day, and thanks for listening. God bless.